Hey, everyone, and welcome to the very first interview in the Meet the Team series for Ortholite. And I'm honored to have Daniel Loyley as my first guest, who is the head of the sales in Europe and the very first sales team member for Ortholite. Welcome to the program, Daniel. It's great to have you here today.
Yeah, thanks for the introduction, Mr. Thank you.
So we have so much fun stuff to talk about today, highlights of your career and a very interesting and awesome trip that you have coming up. So we're going to get into all of that. But before we dive in, I would love to have you just tell us about yourself a little bit, introduce yourself to the audience here today, and then we'll get into your career highlights and all of that.
Okay. So I've been with Ortholite since about 2009. So I'm one of the longest standing members of the team. I'm British. So I was born in the UK in a lovely place in the southwest of England. And I'm actually married to a Belgian lady. And we've been living in Belgium for the past 25 years. And I've since taken also Belgium nationality. So I am now officially dual nationality, UK and Belgium. I have two children. They're both at university in Spain. One's in Madrid and one's in Barcelona. And that's pretty much a quick intro on my family situation.
And we're going to get into a lot of things in terms of what you like to do when you're not selling for Ortholite and visiting our customers. And I'm very excited about that part. And just so everybody knows, this will be a two-part interview with Daniel because of that trip. So we'll get to that here in a minute. I'm going to have you stay on the edge of your seat. So let's talk a little bit about how you found Ortholite or how Ortholite found you, Daniel, and why why are you still here? How has this like marked your career? Tell us about your experience.
I think good place to start for sure. So I've always been in the shoe industry. I've been in the shoe industry for about 25 years, so all my career. And I used to work as an agent, and I used to supply various shoe components like color paste, molds, strobel fabric, toe caps, you name it, anything. So I had a pretty good connection within the industry. And I also knew very well the guys from BASF, which used to be our chemical supplier. We used to actually be their biggest customer in China in the shoe industry. And it was BASF who actually introduced me to Glenn, our CEO, of course, because Glenn had told them that he was looking for someone in Europe to build up the business in Europe. And at that time, there was literally no one in Europe for Ortholite. The key accounts were handled by the USA, the head office. And so it went from there, really. I first met Glenn in 2008. And then I was interviewed by Pam, our ex-president, company president. And then I joined Ortholite in 2009. So as I said before, I'm the first, or say, let's say the longest serving person in the sales team at Ortholite at present. So 13, 14 years going on.
That's awesome. So you're referring to Glenn Barrett, who is our CEO and founder and just an incredible leader. Tell us about maybe one or two of your fondest memories getting to know Glenn. He's such a character and great leader.
it was brilliant. So in fact, in the beginning, when I first started working, we were so much smaller. Things were so very different. And I actually found myself pretty much alone working in Europe since I was the only salesperson over here. And we only had actually one other salesperson in the East Coast and one in the West Coast. And then our company president, and then, of course, Glenn and John. And that was really it. That was the team. So massively different. So I did find myself pretty much alone in Europe. And, you know, you wouldn't believe this now. Obviously, Glenn's always been our CEO, but I would actually give him a telephone call. I'd call him after I'd visited a customer in those days. Say, hey, Glenn, you know, I've just been to visit XYZ customer, fantastic meeting, and just give him direct feedback. And he would love it. And that was the sort of, that's how we started the business, really, over in Europe. It was quite amazing. I wouldn't think to do that now, of course, because, you know, we're so much bigger. But that's how it was. And so that was great. And then, of course, back in the day, Glenn would sometimes, I'd be honored for him sometimes to join me on one of my customer visits. No surprises to guess which ones, of course, in Italy.
I was going to say.
Yeah, Glenn, a big fan of Italy, and particularly the food and wine. But of course, we did a couple of visits together, and I was duly rewarded with some very good fine wine, fine red wine, and food, of course. But yeah, so back in the day, we did a couple of visits. I remember, in fact, supporting Glenn or myself when he did a presentation in Amsterdam, I think it was in Holland, to do with sustainability. So it just goes to show how far back our sustainable story goes. This must have been back in 2011, 2012, when we just launched our eco foam, which contained 12% bio oil. So Glenn was invited to, as one of the pioneers in our field for this type of eco foam, he was invited to do a speech on it. So I actually went over there, being in Belgium, so close to Amsterdam, and supported him. So there's many memories which I have with Glenn. I think another one which I could say, in fact, which comes to mind, was a very fond time at the end of one of our trips when we ended up in the Marriott Hotel at Venice Airport. And, you know, obviously, Glenn, being true to his love for Italy, didn't want to eat food in the Marriott Hotel because it wouldn't be, of course, proper Italian food. And so we had to talk to the staff to find out where the best Italian restaurant was nearby the airport hotel. And they duly gave us a name, which was about 10 kilometers away, of some tiny place. They knew we were coming, so we got dropped off over there. And there was no one else there. So there was a delightful courtyard, which had been set up. There was like one table just for me and Glenn. And we ended up having an amazing, I think it was like 6 or 8 course meal. No one else around. The chef who actually did the serving for us. And I think the thing I remember most was we were actually served homemade grappa out of a 3-liter Coke bottle with some kind of plants inside to finish off the evening. But it was great, lovely. And, you know, it was so good. In fact, we went back the next year with JB, John Barrett, and did exactly the same thing all over again. And the guy actually remembered us. So that was another good memory with Glenn.
Well, I'm curious to know, what was the bug that bit you on this? I'd love to hear, like, maybe some of your early wins, or when you really saw a turning point happen in Europe as you were kind of the Han Solo leader over there.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you have to understand that back in the beginning, you know, when I joined Ortholite, normally when you join a company, in fact, this is what happens now, you would be handed a portfolio of different customers, existing brands, existing customers, and you'd be kind of like part account managing and part finding new customers. That wasn't the case when I joined. They wanted someone to bring in entirely new customers, and the existing customers which we had, which were some of our bigger brands, were actually looked after by head office in the United States. So Pam would deal with them, JB would deal with them. And so I was like sent off and right, go and find some brands. And I remember I used to really, I fixed myself a list of brands that I wanted to contact, the biggest ones, the ones which would bring in the most amount of pairs, the ones which would be more interesting to bring in. And don't forget that what I was selling before in shoe components were completely, it was completely different, because those shoe component, let's say customers of mine, were actually making shoes in Europe. Whereas I was now going after also, not only those, but also other brands which were manufacturing in Asia. And I had no contacts there, like zero contacts. There was no LinkedIn, really. It was just starting in those days. So, you know, one of the ways of me getting new brands and getting the contacts was to go to fairs and exhibitions and shows. And so I remember this is where my big break came, in fact, when I got my first deal with a huge brand. I went to the Bread and Butter Fair, which was in Berlin in the time. It's finished now, unfortunately, but it was a great show. Do you know that show?
I don't, and it's so unfortunate that it doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, I mean, so that's where it all started for me. And it was actually more of a kind of fashion show, that they would be some brands, you know, fashion brands, but hardly any sort of shoe brands as such. But one of them, which I targeted, was Lacoste.
Yeah.
I say that by name because obviously they were there for part fashion, but they also had some shoes. And the, you know, you check out the kind of the website before as to what they were going to exhibit. Anyway, you get to this fair, and you know, there's hundreds of different stands, and of course, those brands who are at these fairs are there to sell. They don't want to be sold to. And so it really, although it was a great way for me to find customers, it wasn't always that easy. So you had to kind of blag your way onto the stand. There'd be a few gatekeepers. And this one time, I remember I'd flown all the way out to Berlin, got the first flight there, it was freezing cold, and I went straight to the Lacoste stand. And the gatekeeper's like, no, do you have an appointment? I said, no, I don't. But I just, I don't know what I said, but I just needed to get in that stand. And I wasn't going to leave without getting in that stand. So I must have sweet-talked whoever it was on the gate. And I was let in. And, you know, I immediately found by chance, this was all kind of luck when it comes together, that one of the key developers for shoes just happened to be on the stand at that time. I mean, I didn't know. And I sat down and he's like, wow, it's amazing you're here because we've got this project right now where we're developing a shoe for professional tennis players that we sponsor. I'm like, wow, this is just amazing. I'm thinking to myself. I said, okay, look, you know, let's not waste your time here now because I don't have all the samples I want to show you, but I just really, it's great we've managed to touch base. Let's fix a meeting in London when it's good for both of us. And so, of course, he was like, wow, this is amazing. I can't believe my luck as well bumping into me. So it was a win-win situation. We arranged the meeting for London with, of course, his boss and some other members of the team. Meeting went really, really well, went back second time and a third time. And after the third time, they said, well, look, you know, this is exactly what we wanted. Can't believe we didn't meet you before now. But anyway, never too late. Would you be prepared to come to Roland Garros, which is the Grand Slam event for tennis, in 2 weeks' time? It was at that time. And to come and present to the players, let's say managers, I think, it was the managers and the players, not necessarily coaches, but some of the managers of the players, the key top directors at Lacoste, and you know, just go through what you just told us now, presented us now, because we want them to see it too. And this, we think, was going to sort of take us to the next level. And I was like, wow, okay, no problem. I'd be very happy to go to Roland Garros in the VIP area of the Lacoste booth. So I went there, and you know, this for me was really like my big break. So I think I remember at the time, I think I prepared this presentation for about a week. I just knew it backwards. It was like, it was so important. I didn't want to screw it up. I just basically focused on that, dropped everything else for maybe, you know, 4, 5, 6 days, because I was doing the presentation in French as well as English, because I knew that there was recent people. So I didn't know which should I do in French or in English. So I did it in both. And I got there, and I remember, you know, they were waiting. It was like an 8 a.m. breakfast meeting or 9 a.m. or something in Paris. And I found my way there, and I saw the table, and I was like, oh my God, I was horrified, because it was all set up for breakfast. Obviously, it was a breakfast meeting, but you can't do a presentation when there are plates and there's coffee cups and croissants everywhere. So I said to the guys, we all sat down. I said to them, I said, listen, right, breakfast can come later. Can you just mind clearing all that lot off the table, because I need to present now? And they were like, really? And I said, yeah, just do it. And of course, I mean, it took some doing to tell them to do that. But anyway, I gave a fantastic presentation, both French and English. Everyone was really, really happy with what they'd seen. And then we had breakfast. And of course, it went from there. We went back to meetings in London. And sadly, that particular project was dropped at the last minute. However, the key for me was try to get in all of the business with that brand. And that remained my focus from now on afterwards. And I think it took about another 8 to 10 months before I received the phone call. I think I was on the beach on holiday somewhere saying, right, it's done. The deal is done. And that was us getting about 11 million pairs of business, which was fantastic.
That's a turning point for sure.
It was a real turning point for me, because until then I'd been looking after trying to get, you know, brands to come in, but they were much smaller, and it just took a while to get going. But I knew this would be my big break. And when we got it, you know, I was so happy. And obviously, Ben and Pam and JB also at the same time. And I have to say, in fairness, we still are, of course, the number one supplier to Lacoste to this day.
That's awesome. So,
more than 10, 11 years later. So really, really happy with that. It's fantastic.
Well, you just touched on such a perfect point about what I wanted to ask you. And that is, you in that explanation, you talked about days, you talked about months, and now you've talked about years. And I know that kind of the bread and butter for you, if I can go back to the show that we wish was still here, is about this relationship that you form. And the relationship is really based on guiding your customer through the process of the evolution of product development. And that's such a special facet to the sales team at Ortholite. And I also think it's what really gets you all out of bed in the morning. You love to do that. And so it must be really heartening to know that you, this very first relationship that served as a I think like a springboard for you in many ways, is still in the Ortholite family as a brand partner. And I would love for you to share a couple of other, like, what are some other favorite aspects you have around working with customers all over the world?
I think one of the key things is that, you know, before I go to visit a customer, and, you know, I have a big list of customers back in the day that I wanted to get on board. I truly believe, and I still believe every single time now when I go and visit a new customer or even an existing customer, that I'm actually going to bring them something better to their product, improve their product. I'm not just going there to sell something, which I just want to make, you know, make a sale and get it done. No, I actually truly believe that if that particular brand starts using Ortholite, they will improve the shoes and they will improve the performance, the comfort for their end users. So for me, it's a win-win situation. I go there to these brands with a satisfaction that I'm going to give them something, but we're also going to get something back. So it's a two-way thing. And I think this is really key when we're looking at sales and when we're looking at building our brand, is that we're not just selling anything. We're selling awful. Like, we're selling something which actually does something good in the shoe. And mm-hmm. I think that goes just for any brand that you go to visit. And I, for sure, that's really, really important to me.
And I have to ask, before we kind of get into a couple of other just facets of your role with the customers, if you were to describe to us how your sales team colleagues might describe you as a travel partner, how would you describe that?
Okay. Well, I mean, to be honest, I don't do a lot of travel with my other colleagues. We kind of like left our own devices over in Europe. But I guess the person I travel with the most would be Andy Seturian, Andy S, otherwise known mm-hmm. as. We do a lot of travel in Vietnam together and also in Germany. So when we visit brands in Germany together. So he knows me really well. I suppose one of my best assets when I travel is the ability to sleep basically anywhere. Okay. So when we get in the van to do you've probably done the 2-hour drive from Ho Chi Minh City out to Ortholite OVN factory, it's like 2 hours drive. I'll get in the car, in the van, and within a minute, I'll be asleep. And I literally wake up to, oh, we're already here. And I've been like sleeping, snoring the whole way there. I think that makes a lot of people laugh. And I could just have this ability just to sleep anywhere, anytime, and in a deep sleep. I think the other thing that Andy would know is he knows I love my Korean noodles. I have to find Korean noodles. But since we're out in Ho Chi Minh, I got to go and get the noodles. That's a pretty important point. But for travel, I guess I have my pet hates. I mean, when you travel so much, and obviously I'm out literally 3-4 days a week, every week, almost every week of the year. That's a lot of travel. And when you spend 3 or 4 nights in different hotels per week, I mean, the last 2 or 3 weeks have been crazy just now. I think last week I did 4 different hotels in 5 days. So it gets crazy. But, you know, you have certain pet hates when I get on the planes. I have to do things in a certain routine. I think my family find it more irritating than anyone else that if I'm not first on the plane getting my bag up there, you know, it's a bit of a problem for me. I guess pet hate, if someone puts their seat back on yeah. the, you know, that just really gets to me.
But, me too.
I think other than that, I'm a pretty good traveler, and you need to be good at traveling, but you need to have a routine. If you don't have a routine when you travel so much, then it's going to be so much more difficult.
Well, especially as you're taking care of like multiple countries and a lot of customers. So you've been in footwear for a very long time, Daniel. And I would love to get your take on, or maybe a few takes on, the state of the global footwear industry today. This is being recorded in early 2023. So thankfully you are back on the road traveling and visiting our customers. And obviously we have, you know, 6 factories up and running all over the world, which provides a lot for our customer base in terms of just risk mitigation, and what you can provide to them through partnership, I think, has really evolved. But so is the industry and the needs of the customer. So I'd love to get a few takes from you.
Yeah, I mean, as I said before, I've been in the footwear industry for about 25, 26 years now, and things have really changed for sure over the time. I guess I started my career predominantly working with Italian shoe suppliers of components and things. And back in the day, northeastern Italy was booming. It was like really busy. I mean, there would be factories producing. I think back in the time, they were doing a lot of the roller blades. That's where roller blades first were launched, was like in Montebluna area. And so, you know, I saw that growth, but I also saw at the same time the growth in China, particularly, and then in Southeast Asia more recently. And then I saw the factories close down in Europe. So I've kind of seen the loop. And now more recently, factories reopening in Europe. So but there was this tremendous shift from what I saw anyway, a lot of Italian brands moving out to Asia, even selling up, you know, rights to put certain production methods and things like that. And so I guess that's been the biggest change, is seeing things go away from Europe and then coming back. I think another really, really important point is I'm so encouraged now that the global footwear is much more focused on the environment. Mm-hmm. And also particularly Ortholite, we put a huge focus on sustainability ourselves. I guess one of the things I'm most proud about with our factories is when we were shown the video back in the sales meeting of Ortholite Vietnam, and just what they'd produced over their 2 years of sort of COVID lockdowns. It was really moving to see a video like that, where you've got over 1,500 employees, all behaving as one family. It was really touching, and that was a really incredible video, just to see the team spirit which they'd come up with. But I guess, yeah, I suppose the production going to Asia and then coming back, that's been the big movers, and it's good to see it coming back to Europe right now.
Absolutely, I'm so glad that you brought up the video around our facility in Vietnam. We have two, obviously, one for Circle and then one for Ortholite Vietnam. And I know that you're there quite a bit traveling, and I'm really glad that you brought that up. And we will have links in the notes below this video so that you can check out the highlights from that video as well. So here we are. I mean, this must be odd for you. January, February of 2023, 470 plus brand partners, Daniel. We have an incredible brand partner family, and I would love to just have you give us kind of your pinnacle definition of what it means to be a great partner to those brands today.
Yeah, I mean, I think I kind of touched on it a little bit before, in the fact that I think we give really something incredible to our brand partners. You know, it's this win-win situation, and our brand partners are all getting something from us supplying with them. In terms of the co-branding that we're able to do as a brand partner, in that sense, of course, we're a branded component, and there are more and more brands now who want to get branded componentry within the shoes, whether it be the rubber outsole, whether it be some kind of insulation material or whatever on the upper. And we're one of those. And so that, you know, we're really, really proud to be able to have a branded component that we can actually, let's say, market as such.
Mm-hmm. I'm totally with you.
I think this is one of the things, you know, back in the day when I first started out, Glenn, our CEO, actually nicknamed me the co-brand king, because I think in that time, almost 95% of all the brands I brought in, the new brands, they were co-brand ones. So I was like known as the co-brand. Yeah, they're co-branding. Yeah, co-branding. So that was pretty cool. The fact that I was nicknamed this, still the name stands, I believe.
Well, and I think in this era, it means more than ever, knowing that consumers and retailers and a lot of people actually are looking for transparency more and more. And they'll be able to learn the Ortholite story and how committed we have been to innovating product and also sustainability process across the world. So I feel like that's going to become, there's almost a new era of ingredient branding happening. I mean, sure, there's like what's popular on the street, and we see that. I think that you kind of see that come and go as trends. But I really think the whole package of ingredient branding on footwear really does designate not only like quality and you know, everything that goes into kind of the performance or the comfort of the product, but it's also about the story of the product and the shoe that's being positioned. And I think that we have so much that we can bring from a transparency standpoint and in addition to that story of that shoe and for those brands. So I'm so happy that you're the co-brand king as the person who's currently shepherding the brand over at Ortholite. So I also have to ask you before we head into our lightning round, who is a person that you would say has been an influence or an influential leader in your life, someone you really admire who's affected how you show up in life and in your career?
Wow. I mean, there are many. For sure, there are many. I would say that the British Formula One champion, Formula One is like the Grand Prix, so it's like racing driving, called Nigel Mansell. He was iconic back in his day. I mean, he had some real struggles to get to where he wanted to be, which was to be world champion. And I remember that the struggles he went through, because I was such a fan of Formula One growing up. And it was only when I read his autobiography that I realized just how much of a struggle it was for him to become world champion. I mean, he sold his house. He literally just did everything he possibly could to focus and to get to where he wanted to be. And I guess that those same things are about focusing and about setting goals and wanting to achieve those goals, I've kind of wanted to emulate and have emulated in seeing Nigel Mansell get to where he was. Maybe it's a strange person to want to admire, but certainly there are many others. But I think he would be one of them. He's such a nice guy as well.
So you've met him?
I haven't met him, but when you see the interviews, you just can't not like him. He's just such a nice guy, and you know, he'll give the time of day to anyone if passes by, and he'll just open up. He's really, really nice.
I love that, and I'm glad that you brought up Formula One, because now that Netflix has brought that more to everyone in the world, I've seen every single episode of Drive to Survive.
Oh, really?
So I have to ask you, who's your team? Like, tell me who are you a fan of today in Formula One?
Well, back in the day, it was Williams Formula One, but I must say, I really like Red Bull now. I'm a bit of a fan of Verstappen, so for sure. But it goes and comes. But Verstappen right now, I like his demeanor.
I do too. Good. And plus, I just love everything Red Bull does, pretty much. But I'm totally with you.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's.
No, I mean Nigel Mansell, he was the one. I mean, I guess it kind of makes me think of when I started with Autolite, and I had this huge uphill. I say this difficulty of bringing on all the brands which I wanted to bring on, and I remember back in the day I would get up at like 4:35 in the morning and I'd have this list of all the brands which I wanted to bring on. I would just go through them and I would like pretend that they were already customers, and then I had a list of my goals, and I would do this every morning, and it was like 4:35 in the morning. I remember did it for a couple of years, and then of course then the break comes, but that's how I succeeded for sure.
You manifested it. That's what they call that. You get up and journal. And,
right.
Yeah, that's really cool. I love that you shared that. Thanks. So let's go into the lightning round. Then we have to get to your trip so we can frame up the part
two.
Of
course. Yeah.
Okay. So I have the lightning round here, just like short answers. First thing that hits you, okay, when I ask you these questions, what do you most like to do when you're not working?
Ooh. Well, right now, sport. I love it. I love doing sport, like working out. Skiing and cooking. I love cooking.
I didn't know that about
you. Cooking and doing a bit of sport, yeah.
That's awesome. Okay, what superpower do you wish you had?
Telepathy.
That would be a good one. Agree. Are you a night owl or an early bird?
Definitely an early bird.
Okay.
And I'm in bed very early.
Yep. Sound like
apart from Fridays and Saturdays.
And that leads me to my next one. What's your favorite drink at the bar?
Gin and tonic with a slice of lime.
And then what is your favorite part of the job?
Ooh, that's an easy one. Getting the buzz of the sale.
Awesome. So that's a perfect segue into what you have coming up in your personal life that all of your colleagues at Autolite are so excited about what you're doing. Tell us about your big trip that's coming up here that you've been training diligently for.
Right. I mean, I have been training. So the trip is to go up Mount Kilimanjaro, which is the highest freestanding mountain in the world. And it actually has a height of 5,895 meters. And it's in Tanzania in Africa, for those who don't know. And I guess it's been a dream of mine to go up Kilimanjaro for quite some years now. And it's more pressing now that you hear stories that the ice pack, so there's an ice pack on top of the mountain, it's so high that it's going to disappear. So I was like, well, I've got to get up there before the ice melts. And secondly, it will give me something to focus on to get my health in order and to give me a point of focus with regards to getting fit and so forth. So, I'm due off in fact, 2 weeks today.
Okay, that's huge. And I do want to just have you share a little bit about your training, because you've really chosen an incredible way to train for this. So you have a big job. You have a family. You have a lot going on. And how have you possibly fit in training for climbing Mount Kilimanjaro in the midst of all of that?
Yeah, I've basically been hibernating for 4 weeks. No social. That's been the first thing. I guess my wife's not too happy with that. But anyway, the main thing is to, you know, certainly make sure I train whenever I go to a hotel. So I've been staying in. In fact, the last 3 weeks, I've been out 5 days on five, getting trips into this beginning of the year. But certainly, it's pre-planning, so knowing you're going to train in the morning or in the evening, and then making sure that the food intake is good, as it should be, lots of protein. And then something quite unusual is that I've been visiting a what they call an altitude chamber, mm-hmm. whereby they will simulate the altitude, different altitudes. So you'll start doing a workout or walking like at 12 degrees for 2 or 3 kilometers an hour at say 4,000, 5,000 meters and 6,000 meters. And you will have a mask on your face, and basically the simulating of the altitude gets you used to that altitude. You don't have to do this if you're going up such altitude, but they strongly recommend to do it because it really prepares your body and prepares your mind for what you'll be led into, because 6,000 meters is pretty high.
Absolutely.
The oxygen level there is much lower at that altitude. When I first went to this altitude center and they put the mask on and they simulated, I think it began at like 2007 and then went to 3,500 and right the way up to 6,000 meters. It's like someone strangling you. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no breath, no oxygen coming out of the mask. It's like, can you just turn this on? And no, that's how it is. Get used to it, sort of thing. And so I've been doing this for now 4 weeks, and the improvement is staggering. That you put on the mask now, it's like you can have a normal conversation. Whereas the first time, it was like, don't even bother talking to me, because it's just, I can't even breathe, let mind talk. So it seems to be going the right way. So I can't wait. Super excited to get up there.
And you have your kit together? I mean, you have 2 weeks to go. You must have your nutrition dialed. Your kit is in place. Like, tell us a little detail.
Getting there, yeah. So I'm fortunate enough to work with some of the very best suppliers of mountaineering kit. La Sportiva and Salomon are two of my biggest brands I work with. I just happen to have trips to them over the last period. So I was able to go and do a bit of shopping in their stores, which was very handy. And so the kit list is almost done. There's still a few things to buy, but mostly done. Yeah. Now I've got to make sure it weighs, because you can't have a bag more than 15 kilos.
Okay.
Because it's going to be carried up the mountain.
That's awesome. So I have to ask before we wrap up, have you been visualizing success and actually getting to the top the same way you visualize success in your career?
I definitely have. Yeah. There's no way I'm not going up that mountain and succeeding.
That's awesome. I love that. Well, we get to have a part two when you're back after you do the full send. You're going to come on again and tell us what that was like. And I just want to tell you, it's been great to get to know you here today. I'm so glad to be able to share all of your stories, because they really just tie together the legacy and history of this great brand that we both get to work with here, and the great team that we work with, and just this growing customer base that you've helped put such a foundation under for growth, Daniel. So it's awesome that you joined us here today. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me. And it's been a real pleasure to share some of my stories. And in fact, to go back and just think, there was so much that I've achieved in, for me, a short space of time. But yeah, 12, 13 years is a lot to achieve in that time. And maybe we can do a few more stories on my second appearance. I've got plenty more to say.
I bet you do. All right. Well, we look forward to it. Thank you again. And good luck up there.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Kristen.